Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music. With musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky tunes.
Just got to wait for that tambourine just to kind of fade right out. Hello, my name is Greg Bresnitz. I'm one half your host of Snacky Tunes. Darren Bresnitz is currently away at his desk job for a little bit longer, so I'll be holding down the fort this week. That was just Bad Girlfriend playing their song Tricky, who will be in studio live. They are right now currently warming up at the bar with some coffee and pizza and will be in shortly. But for now, as always, open with our food guest, we have Alex Dupak of Empellón Cocina, Taqueria, and Culinary Fame.
We'll say Cosina and Taco.
We'll say Cosina and Taco. I will say fame of, because you've been mentioned numerous times by Jordana Rothman. So
that's biased. We're BFFs, but...
So you just kind of like slip her a couple tacos and just if you do press stuff, just kind of work my way in there.
No, nothing like that. We actually, I don't know. We can somehow lose a long tracks of time in bars.
Yeah, I mean, an invite from Jordana. I always like to go early and try and leave early before it shifts to a terrible...
So you go to the dark side?
To the dark side, yeah. For those of you who don't know, your resume reads like I said, you should be 45.
I feel 45. You look
26.
I'm 32.
So we'll meet in the middle at 32. it says you started in the kitchen at age 12. You know, what is like the, 12-year-old equivalent of starting in the kitchen?
Well, I grew up in a small town and I was a skateboard punk and I just wanted extra money to buy spray paint for graffiti and all that. So I got a job as a dishwasher. They don't let you in kitchens when you're that young. You're supposed to have a work permit, at least in my town. But I lied to them and told them I was 14, and that's how I started.
I mean, I guess I would feel like there's like a difference between what someone looks like at 12 and at 14, but...
Yeah, I think they knew. I think they were just overlooking it because I was such a good worker.
Did they pay you properly?
Yeah, yeah.
Under the table, though?
Yeah, not legally, but properly.
But they took care of you?
Yeah.
And so when did you realize that you want to move from dishwashing into, working with knives and food?
Well... right away, actually, I kind of hung out with an older crowd when all the kids I was hanging out with were like in junior high or high school, and for whatever reason they were punks, for lack of a better word, but for whatever reason they were all instead of going into normal high school, they were going into trade school, and all my friends were going into culinary arts. Like we had a high school that actually had a culinary arts department, and so I initially said, well, when I get to high school, I'm going to go there so I can hang out with all my friends. It just happened that it worked out for me that I really enjoyed doing it. So,
I mean, that's pretty good. Just, I don't know how many people go. It's like, yeah, I'll go make a meringue so I can like kick it with the crew after school.
No. So I started as a dishwasher, and then you start peeling potatoes and chopping garlic or doing whatever the hell else they ask you to do. And
now, as the executive chef at two restaurants, is there every day that you wish you could be like, man, if I could just go back to like mincing garlic for 12 hours a day, life would be so much easier.
I tell you, when I get angry, I send the dishwasher home. I let him take a break and I just wash dishes. It's the most relaxing thing on earth.
But why do you think that? I mean, I've read numerous times that chefs suggest like they just like to go there. Is it because it's like you have a dirty dish and 30
it's
seconds?
It's just immediate gratification. It's an immediate sense of accomplishment. You own this little tiny world that you just have to keep clean. It's so much fun. If everyone just ran their station as a cook the way a great dishwasher runs their station, you'd have every restaurant would be 3 Michelin stars.
So like 30 years from now, like be like, oh, who's that guy in the back washing dishes? You're like, oh, used to be some New York chef, and you're just like big smile coming every day. You're just like, yep, just stack them up. I got it. No problem. It's like,
no, I think my retirement, I think I want a taco stand in Oaxaca. I think that'll be the...
Would you like be as like the gringo stand, or would you try to like grow a mustache and wear?
No, I would actually be the most Mexican. I like
you would like over Mexican the Mexican.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'd be like one of those outsiders that knew too much.
Mm-hmm.
They're like,
yeah, I think so. I think
that's not how it's done. They're like, well,
yeah. I'll just be drunk on mezcal all day, and I'll have a dog and
cash
only.
What would the name be of it?
The dog?
No, the Mexican taco place that we're opening in 30 years from now.
For debate, we'll call it. I don't know.
We got a few decades.
Yeah.
We can do that. Before we get to your current restaurants, you were the opening pastry chef for Alinea, which is staggering. What was the process of concepting desserts at that time for something that was so almost fantasy-like?
It was actually really scary, but I mean, at the end of the day, what's most important to me is creativity. And it went from working at a restaurant where you can be creative when you feel like it, but you can still have creme brulee and things like that on the menu, to having no choice, being creative because now it's your job.
Right.
So when I began communicating with Grant about the position, and when I actually got hired, and I saw what he was producing and what he was like, just the level that it was going to be at, it was a gun to my head. It was create or die. So
I mean, how do you feel about that? And there's always this idea that I like to follow. It's like, if you have to live off your creativity, your creative process becomes changed, and sometimes almost becomes like overrun with like financials, or it gets diluted. How were you able to separate that too, once you had to just live by it day in, day out?
Well, it's different. I think the difference is that whether you own the restaurant or not. Mm-hmm. So as a pastry chef of a restaurant that you don't own, you're still very free because you only have to focus on one thing, which is making game-changing desserts. But yes, when you're a chef and you're an owner and you have financial parameters, and also once you're known for something, because the idea of creativity is trying to do what you don't know how to do. But if you made a dish that is 2 years old that you're sick to death of, but someone's coming to your restaurant for the first time and you have to have it, a signature dish, which is something that creative people always try to avoid,
right?
You can't get rid of it because people feel cheated.
Right. They're like, oh, you got to go try it when it's not there. You just go, oh, well, it wasn't worth it. Even though there's other great dishes, they have feel like they have to have something that was described.
Yeah, people want to be told a story and then they want to go and experience it. So
that's very interesting. So what was your creative process for your Alinea days and your WD-50 days, where it's like you were just focused on being as creative as possible?
For me, it just really came down to manipulation. That's why I still, pastry is my favorite section of the kitchen, because it's less about identifying a great product and just trying to do it justice, just trying to cook it beautifully, and it's about trying to create new textures, new shapes, new forms. And that's what I try to focus on. It's really the idea of, it's like the idea of a parlor trick. It's like every dessert should be delicious, it should look beautiful, but for the person who's really paying attention, if they eat it and then go, how did he do that? That then it was the right dish. So
right. I mean, and you easily could have just stayed in the pastry world with your resume and just done pastry things, but instead you chose to look outside and go, did you feel that you had accomplished everything that you wanted to accomplish, or did you just feel like, I don't want to be labeled as just like a pastry guy for the rest of my life?
It wasn't, I mean, there's always more to be to accomplish. So to say you accomplished everything in pastry is arrogant, but it was, I had hit a wall with it personally.
Right, not everything, but
yeah,
you know.
No, I had done at that point what I wanted to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to what we just said. Like once you're known, when you open a restaurant, you're going to be known for that thing. So I wanted to keep it very punk rock and go, okay, well, I'm going to do the exact opposite of what people are going to expect of me. And, I mean, it wasn't just that, but the fact is, like, what I love eating most, which, when it comes down to it, it's Mexican cooking. I thought it was kind of interesting that what I love eating most wasn't what I'm preparing on a day-to-day basis. So I'm trying to wed everything I've learned as a pastry chef with the idea of not wanting to be known for any one thing and just trying to cook what I think is the most delicious.
Do you have one pastry dish that from that era that you feel like defines like the culmination of all the things you were striving to do, or one or two dishes?
One or two. One, and I'll define them technically, not based on flavor, but we created frozen capsules, and it's about a subtle impossibility where you have this gorgeous cylinder of ice, usually a fruit flavor, sealed on all sides, and then when you crack into it, the center's liquid. And the idea of, like, how can you have something frozen on the outside that's liquid on the inside? I mean, nowadays people know 8 different ways from sundae to do that, but when we came up with it, it felt very new. And the other one, and I bring these up because I think they're very mimicked, was our pliable ganache. The idea of a texture that's like a truffle, like a Godiva truffle, very soft, but at the end of the day, you can pulverize it and you can make it twist and turn on a plate in seemingly impossible ways. So,
and what is it about those that you feel defines a culmination in creativity? It's, why those two?
I because from a flavor standpoint, I'd put them up against other desserts. Mm. And from a technique standpoint, it breaks the monotony of, I mean, how many panna cottas have you seen on a menu?
Right.
How many of those things? So it makes the sandbox bigger.
Right.
You can make panna cotta every flavor you want, but now you have a new technique or a new method that you can apply flavors to.
And as the, you know, one of the people on the team that created it, how do you feel seeing it copied, bastardized, innovated on? Do you feel proud? Do you feel like, hey, that's
mine? At first, like as a young person, like being like 25, 26, it infuriates you. But then you realize that it's flattery, and you should kind of let it wash over you, because you have to check yourself and go, really have I never copied anything?
Right.
Really have I never taken influence from anyone?
Do you feel like there's a protocol? Like, you know, I've seen traveling just across, I've seen like crack pie in windows of stores where it's like, well, you should really call it, you can make it, but you should really say it's Momofuku crack pie. Like, do you feel that people should name check, or it's just, that's even just another hang up and you should just be happy?
I think if you're calling something crack pie, that person could get sued. I mean, the first time I ever had crack pie, I had the pleasure of working with Christina Tozzi. She was
she's wonderful, right?
She's amazing.
She's great.
I first met her, she was one of Sam Mason's pastry cooks,
mm-hmm.
at WD-50, and when Sam mm-hmm. Mason was leaving, I actually had the pleasure of working with her for 3 or 4 weeks while she was transitioning out. Crack pie was one of the most delicious things I'd ever had, and she was making it for staff meal. She was just making what she would make the most amazing desserts for staff meal you had ever had. Like, normally for staff meal, restaurants don't make dessert.
Right.
And if they make something, they're going to make a batch of brownies or something. This girl's, like, making her own croissants.
Right.
She, like, just above and beyond, because she loved making people happy, so.
So, right. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick musical break, and we're going to talk about your two new restaurants.
Awesome.
Potentially the death of entrees, if you get your way, and all things Mexican and awesomeness. We have a song coming up from the new No Such Thing record called Phase 3, and then we have Bad Girlfriend playing live in studio. You're listening to Snacky Tunes. Right, that was just No Such Thing off of his record Home, which you can get on Innovative Leisure, which is a great label. Should check out all of their bands. We are live in studio today with Alex Dupac.
What's going on?
Of Empanion Cucina and Taqueria, which we had the pleasure of eating at on Friday.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm psyched you could come.
The sweetbreads, amazing. Pastrami. You know what I was going to say? Pastrami tacos is something that I feel like has been copied. Like pastrami inserted into like the egg roll, like Red Farm. There's been something mm-hmm. that has been taken and then reappropriated in amazing ways.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, from an intellectual standpoint, we were talking about the idea of reverse colonization or like thoughtful fusion. So, I mean, Mexican cooking at its core, it's a fusion cuisine, and it wouldn't be what it is today without multiple influences. But the idea of like, well, if a Mexican colony were to come to New York City, like what would be absorbed? And it's all just for fun. And at the end of the day, it's just a delicious taco, but
Yeah, but I mean, it's really great. And what I like about your place is that you kind of have something that I enjoy, is that it's a lot of small bites and not just like tapas, but there's not like some obligatory entree that's on there that you would maybe find. It's like, okay, we're here. And then it's like, oh, maybe I should get the burrito or some like really bang out dish. You're like, I just want to concentrate on small bites. Is it a conscious decision to move away from the entree on your menus?
Yeah, I mean, when we first opened Cocina, we tried to, there were no main courses whatsoever. And what I ran into was that people became confused. And I didn't understand, because there's a lot of restaurants that share food. What I learned from the whole thing is that it doesn't just matter that you're telling people to share. What matters is that, like, how does the dining room look? What type of plateware are you giving them? Like, how composed are the plates? And I've basically come down to the, unless you're a Chinese restaurant, a barbecue joint, a tapas bar, or a place where there's communal seating and chopsticks, people are going to have a hard time being told that they can't get an appetizer in a main course.
Right. But, I mean, what would your ideal situation be? Just small plate? I mean, and not... How would you do small plates and not have it be, like, a tapas bar?
Right. Well, that's a problem, because you have to give people the option, because at Cocina, we're also trying to make the food beautiful. And what I've learned is that the more time you spend composing a dish, the more time the average person will dissect it as opposed to just devouring it. So you have to take that into account.
So, I mean, when you did put entrees back on, what did you focus on for entrees?
Well, we just basically what we did initially, because we just felt like it was an emergency, like we had to do it, because I didn't want a restaurant where it comes with instructions on how to eat. I've just never been a fan.
Right.
So we took some of our things that we were selling as small plates and basically just made them bigger just to fix the problem immediately. And now we're kind of in an in-between spot, because we've decided we're not passionate about just putting 8 ounces of protein on the plate and cooking it well. There has to be an idea behind it. So we're beginning to talk about the idea of, like, can we make our main courses like real Mexican dishes, which means that they'd be much more focused on vegetables and carbohydrates than it would the meat. Again, most cooking in Mexico, the meat is there to flavor other things as opposed to other things flavoring the meat.
I mean, your tacos are pretty meat-heavy. Like, you can almost, some of them you can't really close the tortilla.
Our tacos are meat heavy. I mean, at the end of the day, our tacos are very value driven. Like, the point of that is that most people think of a taqueria as a place where the taco should be $2 to $3 maximum. And we didn't want to do that because we wanted to be able to put anything we want on a tortilla.
Right.
So if I have a cook who works at one of my taquerias who's excited that that Maine diver scallops have just come into season, I can't look him in the eye and say, yeah, but you can't order that because you work at a taqueria.
Right.
Because the whole idea is that, well, I want a clean kitchen. I want a yes chef, no chef type of kitchen. I want discipline in anything that's called empeón, and anything I do, really. So that's a two-way street. That means you have to give them the ability to create what they want to create.
I mean, are there any tacos that haven't made it onto the menu that were just like too out there?
Two out there.
That came from one of your chefs. She's like, well, we'll try.
We shot down the meatloaf taco, which was delicious. And we think the concept could be reworked. But meatloaf taco with chipotle ketchup felt a little too, I don't know how to put it, a little too kitschy.
Right.
But the idea of, like, we took that idea and said, well, help, but what if we made, like, a piece of French charcuterie? What if we made a terrine or a galantine and serve that with like sauce grabiche and put that on a tortilla? Again, nothing to do with Mexican cooking other than the fact that it's on a tortilla, but I like the idea. We like the idea that a taco isn't just a set of rules, but it's just simply a vehicle or a way of eating.
Right. I mean, tacos have now gotten like the high-end treatment and everything, and then there's like a couple places like potentially street food. Like, do you remember that poutine bar that was on in the Lower East Side that did not work?
Yep.
Do you think anyone will ever take like a high-end approach like chilaquiles or nachos, for example, and do like a high-end, like you could order like a $20 plate of nachos at a restaurant?
Sure. I mean, well, it's interesting you bring up nachos. Maybe not nachos for us in our restaurants, but chilaquiles certainly. I mean, chilaquiles, for people who don't know, it's a quick-cooked tortilla casserole. It's some chips that have been sautéed in a delicious salsa, and it's usually served with an egg for brunch.
I mean, if Darren was here, he would say that it's his favorite Mexican dish.
Yeah, it's amazing. We served it at Cocina with scallops, and now we're talking about a new main course where we're serving a dish of chilaquiles, but with duck.
I would eat that.
Yeah, there you go. Nachos, we won't ever serve nachos. I don't want to ever say never, but we won't serve nachos in the restaurants just because I think they're purely an American phenomenon. They were created in Mexico, and they are delicious as hell. But one, they don't personally resonate with me as anything particularly Mexican. And Mexican has to be the starting point for all our inspiration at Empeon. That's the rule.
But, I mean, people could... You could do, like, one of your side projects is, like, a nacho bar.
I could do that. It couldn't be called Empeon.
No, but not Empeon. But, I mean, what would your ideal nacho be?
That's a good question. I know very little about nachos, and it's ironically, I just was challenged to a nacho throwdown.
What's a nacho throwdown?
It's basically three judges and a friend of mine who's a pretty well-known DJ, DJ Diesel Boy. He was drunk and talking smack in one of my restaurants and basically challenged me to that he could outcook me. He's actually always challenging me that he can outcook me. So I was also drunk enough that I said, fine, I don't make nachos, but we're gonna get into it. And I'm nervous because I know the judges are very passionate about nachos. And so I'm trying to learn about the parameters of what makes it.
Let me give you an insider tip.
Yep.
Make sure that your chip to topping ratio is on, because a lot of places will bring out nachos that just the top layer, and then it's just, you know, the chips on the bottom.
Chips are dry.
You feel
bottom.
Cheated.
Gotcha.
There's that taco place, Taco Chulo on Grand Street has some of the best nachos ever. If you want to do some research, Grandin Havemeyer. Just because you have to order extra chips to get it, but there's also that other side of it being too soggy at the end.
Yeah.
So, you know,
It sounds like it's a condiment distribution issue.
Right.
It has to be a communal dish, though, right?
Right. It has to be a communal dish, but you also don't... Some people will find the joy in the soggy chip at the end. Some people will just kind of want to see it crispy all the way through.
See, that's an American versus Mexican thing. I have a friend who's a Mexican chef who says that Americans' favorite flavor is crunchy.
Interesting.
But it's true that they don't care about chips. Like, chilaquiles is a perfect example where it's actually like trying to get the perfect bite of cornflakes. If you eat it right when you put the milk on, it's too crunchy. And if you wait too long and it's too soggy, it's no good. And it's finding that sweet spot between crunchy and rehydrated.
Right. That's fair. I mean, also, the only thing I say with judges, know your audience. If they're Americans, you got to cook for those Americans.
No, they're Americans sure. So we're going to... What does that mean? Chili? Sour cream?
Well, I mean, that's what it is. But, I mean, you can explore. You know.
Maybe I'll make a tinga poblano. I'll actually put some real Mexican chorizo in it.
That would be amazing.
Better version of chili.
Anyway, Alex, well, thank you for joining us.
No, thank you.
What are the nuts and bolts for websites, Twitter, all that stuff for the restaurant and for people to follow you?
So, Twitter. You can follow me, which is at Alex Stupak. We also have at Empeon, and our website also super easy, www.empeon.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thanks for having me.
And up next, we have a couple tracks off new records from Tori Moi and the Spento Band, and then we've got Bad Girlfriend coming and playing in live. You are listening to Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm by the water, but I look away cause it makes light shine in my eyes. I look away because light won't stop shining in my eyes. I'm by the water, but I look away cause it makes bugs fly in my eyes. I look away cause the bug won't stop flying in my eyes. I look away, 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 just to find what I see in you. I look away, I look away, I look away, just to find what I see. I come by a telephone but walk away cause it brings your voice to my head. I walk away cause your voice won't stop ringing in my head. I'm by your doorbell but I walk away cause it brings your sound to my head. I walk away cause your sound won't stop ringing in my head. I walk away, I walk away, I walk away, I walk away, I walk away just to find what I see in you. Walk away, walk away, walk away just to find what I won't stop getting in my eyes. I look away, I look away, I look away, I look away, I look away just to find what I see in you. I look away, I look away, I look away just to find what I
That was just Spinto Band off of their new record, Cool Cocoon, which comes out this week or next week or something, sometime soon. Want to welcome to the studio, Bad Girlfriends.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
One of the few bands that actually agrees to eat pizza beforehand, but I feel like you look like you're definitely up for it. I mean, it's a cold winter day. I mean, I'm trying to eat and drink coffee like all the time in this winter. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Do you want to go around the room and just announce, say who you are?
Sure. I'm Savannah King. I'm the bass player.
Lila Vander, drummer.
Christian Owens, guitar player.
Hi, I'm Brianna, and I play guitar, too.
A lot of bands claim that they're based in friendship, but actually it seems like you four are really tight. Is that true? All friends? And how did you all meet?
Well, we decided to start the band because we were friends and we wanted friends to be in the band. So, and it really had no basis on playability or, you know, anything like that.
Playability. So what you're trying to say is you didn't have to know how to play an instrument to join the band.
Exactly. No.
Not at all. I barely knew how to play guitar. Christian and I had played in before together in bands, but I just played tambourine.
And I played bass in that band. I had never played guitar in a band before, so it was kind of like a new world for me a little bit.
And as that, which is like obviously the total idea of like a punk rock DIY starting, like how do you learn as a band and just kind of acknowledge the fact that like this will get better, but we're still going to go play shows and be a band?
Well, the way that we made it work is we booked a show before we, me and Brianna had been kind of playing around and
farting around
in my living room and like trying to learn how to use Pro Tools and just this and that. So we'd come up with kind of like a small, maybe two or three songs a little bit. But we just booked a show before we really had any songs and definitely didn't have a band.
How was the show?
It was good. Poor Savannah had never played anything.
And I have
Hold on. Like, hadn't played any songs or any instruments?
Instruments.
Ever. And they pulled me in and, like, tricked me into joining the band 2 days before the first show, and I was like, all right, I guess I'll try it out.
I don't think tricked is the right word. I think bullied.
We bullied her into it.
What were your scare tactics?
Well,
it was actually my best friend, Paula Merritt. She used some reverse psychology on me and was like, you're so shy, you'd never do this, but we really need your help. And I was like, well, but, I mean, but, okay, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah, she was our first drummer, but she bullied you into it.
She bullied me into
100%.
Wait, how'd you get rid of her? Or where'd she go?
She moved to California. She's, like, a mom now, lives in L.A., married. Mm-hmm. And then we found Lila. Mm-hmm.
And how did they coerce you into this band?
Oh. I met Lila.
Literally everyone just turned red. No one could see because it's radio, but everyone just turned red.
No. I totally shanghaied the situation. Basically, this girl, this person that me and Lila both kind of knew, but not really, was basically like, I want to start jamming. Well, Bad Girlfriend had been looking for a drummer when our original drummer left, and we had a really, really, really hard time finding someone because we really wanted it to be like a friend situation. So anyway, this girl was like, hey, I met this really amazing drummer, this girl named Lila. She's really pretty and really cool and has a great voice and a fabulous drummer, and she's playing with all these dudes. And so literally like a red flag went up and I was like, ooh, a good drummer. That's a chick, you know?
Mean, your first thing was like, wow, she can actually play an instrument. That sounds like,
right.
That sounds like overqualified for the original.
Well, a little bit, yes.
At this point, they were all really good. Like, they've been playing for all. Savannah is now like a kick-ass bass player. I just want to put that out there.
Okay. Well, but this girl was like, do you want to play guitar with us? I was thinking of, like, jamming somewhere, and I was like, oh, well, how's my practice space on Wednesday night?
She stole her from this girl.
She, like, the girl left the room, and she was like, hey, I'm in this band.
Wait, is this where the name Bad Girlfriends come from?
No.
That's a different story.
That actually comes from a different story.
That was a joke. I know your origin story. That was an inside joke for all the Bad Girlfriend friends listening. Why don't we get a song going? Yeah. Can I chorus you? Play a song.
Enough yapping.
What's this one called?
Which one are we doing first? Over the Seas? Is that what you
want to
do?
Yeah.
Let's do Over the Seas.
Are you ready?
Thank you.
Great. You would never know that none of you knew how to... Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's a one-man cheering section in here. It's like, I have still not figured out after all these episodes how to, like, say, like, I really enjoyed that, or nothing sadder than, like, one person clapping. It's just a terrible... There it is.
There it is.
That's, if there were more of me, that's what I could do. Anyway, that was awesome. So you all are from, like, all over the country, Deep South, California, Texas, New York girl. What does that mean for culinary adventures on the road?
Ooh. Well, we all have pretty much completely different palates. That's for sure.
That's not true. You and I like a little bit of spice.
Well, yeah,
me
and
you are really into okay, hot yeah, sauce and spicy.
Except for Savannah is like, will not be having no spice and no condiments.
Yeah. No condiments?
No condiments for Vanny.
I'm a weirdo.
I'll bring all the sauces for me. I'm up for it.
So what do you normally eat when on the road? Or do you cook for each other?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Mexican
food.
Lila is an amazing cook.
She's on breakfast.
Brianna makes great tacos.
Brianna's on the Mexican food.
I make the margaritas.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hey, you need a good drinks person.
She
that's just as important.
Bananas.
Bass player.
And you?
She makes good soup.
Yeah, I make really good soup. And
what's your favorite soup she makes for you?
She makes this amazing, it's like miso, spicy miso vegetable soup.
Yeah, it's like vegetable madness soup.
It's so good.
It's really good. It's really good.
She just like dumps a ton of hot sauce and miso soup. And then
and like every vegetable that's available. At the grocery store.
So it's like garbage sink miso soup.
It's basically
spicy,
garbage sink,
hot.
Healthy.
But it was healthy.
You get vegetables.
And Lila, what do you make for breakfast?
Oh, sometimes frittatas. You know, get some potatoes.
She's really good at scrambled eggs.
Yeah. I like to cook too, but it's all kind of like, you know, on the fly.
Do you
make
cook
it up as you go?
Do you cook for the people you stay with when you're on the road?
Yeah.
We did. We all made breakfast for our friends Justin and Darby that let us record at their house upstate. That was like our thank you.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we cook. No, we went out for Mexican.
Oh yeah,
we're all really big fans of going out to eat though.
Oh, I mean, you do live in New York.
Yeah.
So I mean, this is all actually just trick questions. You should have just said we don't cook.
We
don't really
sometimes
cook much.
We do cook. Actually, I feel like for a band, we cook more than most people I know.
Wait, right? Savannah, I have to ask, like, what do you like to eat? You can be weird about it. It's fine.
Well, I'm a vegetarian, but I still eat fish because my brother was a sushi chef, so I could never...
I know that.
I could never give that up because of him.
Oh, okay. Where's your favorite vegetarian spot in Brooklyn?
Well, I really like Mogador, and I go
that
to...
That place is so good.
Yeah.
I'm so happy we got that here.
I know. Dreams do come true.
I mean, so many people talked about it. I was like, it can't be that good, and it really is.
It's actually better, I feel like, than the one in the city, don't you?
I only had it in the city like one or two times, but I mean, I didn't. Yeah. I don't know how. I don't know how it could be better than this one, if that's the correct.
This one is better.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And you said radish.
Radish is great on Bedford.
Yeah. Allswell is really great.
Allswell, yeah. Well, and also Sweetwater is amazing, and they always will make me something special.
Sweetwater, the lamb burger on the English muffin joint.
Yeah.
Which it's known for, not for vegetarian.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is that they always make me something special.
Oh, for that palate of yours.
Yeah.
Okay.
With no condiments.
No condiments.
And no hot sauce.
Yeah. We'll give you an English muffin. We have a lot of them, but no butter, no jam.
Yeah, it's like for sixth graders.
Will you do caramelized onions though? Because I think there's caramelized onions on that jam.
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Those are just like sweet. There's not really like a strong taste one way or the other to those things.
True.
Yeah.
Which is what makes them.
Yeah.
You know,
why don't we get another song?
Okay.
What are you gonna play?
This is an oldie. It's called Mexico.
Yeah. It's cold outside, but we want you to pretend that you're on the beach somewhere with us. All right. Ready? Run away with me, my darling.
So good. Did they play a sound effect?
They did.
Yeah, I can't hear anything. You have the headphones. That was great. Why is that? What one is that off of? You said it's an oldie.
That's off our first EP.
Oh. I love that you have your EP that you can get for free on your Bandcamp page. Yeah. I really think that, like, that's kind of the way to go. I know it's like most musicians, like, I need to get paid, but, like, you're really going to get paid on your shows, merch, mm-hmm. tours, mm-hmm. things like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Was it a group decision just to kind of go that free music route, or?
Yeah, well, I feel like also if you're new, there's, like, no reason for you to be, like, pay to listen to this shit that you've never heard before. I feel
right.
like it's good to, like, give people something to get to know you by.
Yeah, but now we're working on our full-length album.
Oh, really?
Currently.
Yes. Currently.
In the process.
That you'll have to pay for.
That's right.
Maybe we'll do a little teaser. Maybe like a 24-hour free stream. You never know.
What's the process of working on your new LP?
Oh, well, we actually have a guest today.
Yeah, we're working with this guy in the room, Aaron Fenning.
You, sir.
A.K.A. Rewards.
Yay.
Which is how I found out about you, the four of you, was through Aaron. So.
Yeah, he has been with us every step of the way, and he's producing the record, and we also got our buddy Benjamin Curtis from School of Seven Bells involved, and he's producing it with Aaron here and there, and it's just...
Dream team.
It's been great.
Does he get breakfast cooked for him?
Not yet. We're...
Yeah.
And we owe you a big dinner.
Hey, bad girlfriends, am I right? Am I right? So when is this thing going to be finished, or is it like, are we in the middle of it, or the beginning?
We're in the second half, but we still have a lot to do. We've done
spring.
Yeah, but hopefully we'll be done by February. By the end of February.
Right. So do you have any shows coming up in Brooklyn?
We don't at the moment because we're just trying to spend all of our time because we're flying solo right now. We're just making it ourselves with our friends, and we don't have like a label, or you know, we're paying for it, you know, and working all on our own right now at this point. So no shows because we're just focusing on this record,
which is good.
Yeah,
that's a good approach. All right, well, thank you for joining us. I want to make sure we get one more song in here. What are the nuts and bolts? Where can people find you, get your free EPs, follow you?
Oh, well, you can listen to the EP and download it on our Bandcamp page.
Did you just go yeah.
Radio
did you just,
boy.
Did you just go NPR on us?
No, you know what? Listen, I'm getting over a cold, so okay. I'm a little throatier. It's also my sex phone operator voice. I'm sure some of my fans from my work recognize me.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you can go to our Bandcamp page, Bad Girlfriend Band, Bandcamp. Download
no,
that
just badgirlfriend.bandcamp.
And then our website is badgirlfriendband.com. Anyway, someone else will take it away.
All right, well, thank you so much. Thank you to Alex Tupac and to Aaron, a.k.a. Rewards, for bringing you girls in here. You can hear some of Rewards live on the Snacky Tunes Live Comp Volume 3, which you can get on the Heritage Radio Network SoundCloud page. Thanks for listening. Shout out again to Darren, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes. What are you going to take us out with?
True Blue. This is a new one.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.